Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of The Carbon Curve. I'm your host, Naeem Merchant, and this is a podcast about the policies, technologies, and collective action needed to remove billions of tons of carbon dioxide from the atmosphere and fend off the worst effects of climate change. I strongly believe that carbon removal can be a force for good, not just in terms of creating lasting climate benefits, but in delivering social, ecological, and economic benefits as well. Indeed, I think the future of carbon removal depends on that promise playing out. But I don't think it's a foregone conclusion that large-scale carbon removal deployment is uncompromisingly and unequivocally good for people and planet. As we build this new industry, an intentional approach to its responsible deployment is absolutely necessary. We need an approach that goes beyond assessing the performance and cost of a technology, or the scientific validity or quantifiability of a certain solution, but actually rethinks how policies and regulations are designed and how projects are financed and deployed. An approach that includes the voices of communities often left out and delivers benefits that those communities actually care about. We're at the starting line of what could be a potentially massive new industry, so getting this right sooner rather than later can have a huge impact in the years to come. Today, I'm speaking to two carbon removal leaders who are bringing stakeholders together to help educate project developers on responsible carbon removal deployment. There's a lot of exciting work to do in this space. It's actually central to our focus at Carbon Removal Canada, which is why I'm excited about this episode and about covering this topic on a more regular basis. Okay, let's get started. Hi, everyone. Today, my guests are Nikki Batchelor and Ben Rubin. Nikki is the executive director for the $100 million XPRIZE Carbon Removal, a competition supported by the Musk Foundation to drive innovation, market adoption, and responsible deployment of carbon removal solutions. In this capacity, she oversees program operations, develops partnerships, and leads strategic initiatives on topics such as environmental justice and investor engagement, including the Circular Carbon Network that provides market insights for the growing carbon tech and carbon removal sectors. Nikki also supports XPRIZE's work across the energy and climate domain and previously managed operations and impact programs for the $20 million Energy Kusia Ek Carbon XPRIZE from 2015 to 2021. Ben is the executive director and co-founder of the Carbon Business Council. Ben serves on the Environmental Technologies Trade Advisory Committee at the U.S. Department of Commerce, a federal appointment position. He is a research fellow with the Institute of Responsible Carbon Removal. Ben has been advancing climate action throughout his career, leading initiatives for companies, accelerators, governments, and nonprofits. His work has galvanized billions of dollars in climate infrastructure funding, passed legislation, and reached hundreds of millions of people through media campaigns. XPRIZE is an established global leader in designing, launching, and executing large-scale competitions to solve humanity's greatest challenges. The XPRIZE unique model democratizes innovation by incentivizing crowdsourced, scientifically viable solutions to create a more equitable and abundant future for all. The Carbon Business Council is a member-driven and tech-neutral trade association of companies unified to restore the climate. It's the preeminent industry voice for carbon management innovators. Together, the nonprofit coalition represents more than 100 companies and organizations across six continents with more than $16.5 billion in combined assets. It's really great to have these two on the show. Nikki, Ben, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having us.
It's great to be with you too. Ben, you were one of the first few guests we had on the Carbon Curve. I think you were guest number two of all the episodes that we've done so far. And we've done about 30 or so episodes since then. Before we get started on some of the other topics we wanted to cover today, can you first tell us a little bit about the Carbon Business Council and what you all have been able to achieve and how it's grown over the last couple of years?
Yeah, and thanks again for having me on. It's been great to follow along with the Carbon Curve podcast and see all the exciting trends and developments that you've been covering in the carbon removal space since this has launched. And the carbon removal space has grown dramatically in the last few years. And with that, the Carbon Business Council has also continued to grow. When we launched and when I was on the podcast last time, I was talking about the Carbon Business Council's belief that a rising tide can raise all ships as we work to gigaton scale carbon removal. And we've continued to take that approach. We've brought together more than 100 companies, tech neutral, representing every form of carbon removal. Have had a number of policy wins during that time. One thing that's been especially exciting is forming policy working groups to develop and formulate issue briefs and policy positions on issues. So most recently, we've put out an issue brief on marine carbon removal, and our next issue brief will be focused on enhanced weathering. That will be coming out in early March.
That's really great. I'm looking forward to seeing those issue briefs, especially on those two topics. And it really looks like Carbon Business Council has come a long way since we had the kind of kickoff podcast episode on what you all were doing. You know, Nikki, for folks who aren't familiar with the XPRIZE carbon removal, can you walk us through just what it is and what stage of this important competition we're in right now?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me on today. Always great to talk with you both. So we launched the XPRIZE carbon removal back in 2021. So we're about 3 years into a four-year competition. XPRIZE uses the prize model broadly to accelerate innovation on a given topic. So we designed this back in 2018, right when there was kind of broad recognition that carbon removal really needed to receive some attention and be a critical part of the climate strategy overall. And so we've been working to try and crowd in as many new innovators into the space using this model. Kind of over the last few years, we've had roughly 1,300 people, companies, teams, students raise their hand and say they're interested in joining the cause and trying to advance a carbon removal solution. So over the last few years, those folks have advanced at varying stages and speeds. And so now we're kind of getting into the home stretch where people have to start really building demonstrations that remove CO2 from the air and the ocean. And so we're kind of at this moment where we're transitioning from a very large cohort of, you know, 1,000 people into this several hundred that are trying to really be vying for a finalist spot, which is kind of the last year. We'll be working with a small cohort of 20 finalists to receive the remaining prize money. So we're in the process right now of reviewing submissions that just came in February for finalist applications. And we'll be making a big announcement in the spring of who those 20 companies are that move forward with us.
Wow. Okay. So that's coming up soon. And so if I got you correctly, the 20 remaining teams we'll know about in the April timeframe. Is that right?
Yeah, we're looking at April, May, just locking down the details of the exact announcement date right now. Depending on other kind of strategic factors, but we're really excited to kind of have that cohort set and watch them all try and remove 1,000 tons of CO2 in 12 months. That's the challenge ahead of them. So it's the 20 people who are kind of best placed to do that with the most exciting technologies and solutions for carbon removal.
That's super important. And I love that there's a minimum scale threshold that folks need to get to where it's, you know, still early stage. We're recognizing these early stage companies, but at the same time, we're talking about a scale where there's a lot that we can learn from that. And I think that's super important, and I'm really glad to see it. There's a lot that XPRIZE has been doing in addition to and kind of supporting the ecosystem around carbon removal. So for example, you published the Carbon Removal Innovation Landscape and the 2024 Outlook Report back in fall 2023. Can you give us a quick review on just what they say about the progress of the broader sector and what your learnings and takeaways have been since supporting the sector beyond the kind of exciting competition that you're running as well?
Yeah, absolutely. We've really tried to put as much data back into the community as possible at each of the stages that we're in. And so I think when we released this report during Climate Week last year, it was a great moment where we had roughly 350 companies who were still active in the competition submit a lot of different data and updates about their projects. And so we anonymized all of that data and tried to put out some different landscape trends for the space. It's really meant to be like a snapshot in time of where the cohort is at. I mean, we believe that that group of 350 was pretty representative of most of the activity in the CDR space of people who are really starting to build demonstrations. So there's a lot of people, you know, in earlier TRL levels where they're really, you know, just trying to get their idea in the lab to work. But we're trying to push people and focus on the cohort that's coming out of that phase and building those first of a kind pilots and starting to really show what works and what doesn't from their early demonstrations. So the report really breaks down data across all the different CDR pathways, how many people are working on. We use the categories air, ocean, rocks, land to broadly explain all the different CDR types. So all of our data is broken out in those lines. We broke down TRL levels, which you can see quite a big spread actually across all of the different pathways. We look at the cumulative planned removal for 2024 at that moment in time was a projection of around 4 megatons, which was really interesting to see. And we're going to try and do a deeper dive this year on where that ends up, you know, because that was a projection of where companies wanted to be. So we'll see the reality of that. And also we looked at some of the kind of big questions around business models. You know, people are trying to figure out how they're going to make sustainable companies here. And so are they going to be selling credits? Are they going to be selling products? We had some really interesting results that showed a lot of companies are looking at making products right now in all the different categories. And we looked at the top areas of innovation. So a lot of people really trying to focus on scaling, core performance, cost reduction, modularity, and products or co-benefits. Those were the top 5 areas of innovation across all of the companies. And also we looked at, you know, what are some of the biggest barriers that companies are facing? Funding obviously is not a surprise. Many people are really pushing to raise capital at a really fast clip right now. And other areas, like marketing and sales and permitting and things like that. So all that data is broken out in the report, and we'll do a deeper dive this spring on the new set that comes in from the finalist submissions, which we just received 204 companies in that cohort. So we'll have a little bit of a deeper look on things like life cycle assessment data and cost analysis and all of those things that were part of the finalist submission.
Very cool. I'm really looking forward to digging into that data. And it sounds so much of it is going to be available to the public so that those who are not in the competition can actually benefit from it as well, which is really important. And it seems like a really smart way to design something like this. We've been thinking a lot about an innovation challenge in Canada to get carbon removal companies here through a similar process. And I think there's a lot that we can learn from how you all have structured the XPRIZE. So that's really, really exciting. Ben, just to shift over to you and shift gears a little bit, in the fall of 2023, the Carbon Business Council launched the Carbon Dioxide Removal Responsible Deployment Training, CDR-RDT. And before we get into the details of the program itself, I just wanted to learn a little bit more about, you know, what responsible deployment as relates to carbon removal, what that means to you and why it's important. You know, why did you come together to create the RDT with XPRIZE? And also, who else is involved in this collaborative effort?
Yeah, thanks so much for your interest in CDR-RDT. So it includes an introductory online training and a suite of resources focused on responsible deployment and community engagement. And I think it's a great question, you know, why focus on that? When we think about carbon removal and reaching gigaton scale, we need to fire on all cylinders. So it includes injecting capital into the space. It includes the important work that Carbon Removal Canada is doing, the important work that XPRIZE is doing. We need innovators, we need policy, we need all of it. One critically important topic is thinking about how we ensure that carbon removal can earn the social license to operate. So one stat or something that's salient to me is carbon removal, it often draws comparisons to where the solar industry was 20 years ago or 10 years ago when we look at bending the technology cost curve, scaling up a new industry. Stat for me that's especially compelling when we look at the renewable energy industry is that there's a study that's in Science Direct, and I can drop in the link if folks want to look it up in the show notes, that only 13% of renewable energy projects with local opposition end up being completed after they face an initial stoppage or delay. And I think it shows that if community members have questions about a project or concerns about in the community, it gets really tricky for projects to be able to advance at the local level. And so we started CDR-RDT by thinking about that, really asking the question, as carbon removal is deployed, how can we maximize benefits for local communities and minimize risks? And it was really a multi-stakeholder effort to work through this and put it together. We convened an advisory committee of environmental justice experts. We workshopped the online training with more than 20 experts before we released it. And it's been great to have it out in the world so far. We've had more than 500 people complete the introductory online training since we rolled it out. And I think one thing that becomes really important in the space in terms of diving into this world of social license is that the work is always in motion. The training itself is introductory. It's beginning and not an end. And I think it's just a way to surface that as we're thinking about scaling carbon removals, we're having conversations about capital, we're having conversations about technology readiness level, really critically important is to also be having conversations around this side of it, the responsible deployment and social license for carbon removal to scale.
Yeah, that's really important that we don't miss that critical piece that is going to be really, really essential to scaling carbon removal and also is the right thing to do. You know, we think about responsible deployment in terms of carbon removal projects and how they can be done in partnership with communities and that communities can actually be active participants in what these projects look like and actually be excited about carbon removal projects, proximal to their community and how it can benefit them, that they would actually want to invite carbon removal project developers to build projects because the hope is that we've done a good job thinking about what does responsible deployment look like and acting on it and showing that out in the real world. And so what's so exciting about the work that you all are doing is that you're basically helping to set a framework for what responsible deployment looks like. And if we can set a really good example around this early on, then the hope is that communities are getting more actively involved in as participants in scaling up carbon removal longer term, which I think is going to be absolutely necessary for success alongside all of the technical issues that we need to work through, all the financing issues that we need to work through, all of the policy gaps that we need to address. So all these things are super important. I'm glad that you're focusing on this. I think it's going to be really important to the success of carbon removal long term. And to go to the point around the importance of actually, you know, not just doing a training, but implementing it, it's been really great to see that XPRIZE has made it mandatory for companies competing in the $100 million competition to complete the RDT. And so, Ben, you've mentioned that already 500 individuals have signed up for the program. You know, Nikki, what's been the feedback from companies and stakeholders on the RDT so far?
Yeah, great question. So we did require it as a component of the submission for the finalists that just came in. So we know at least 200 of those were XPRIZE teams who have gone through the program. Let me just take a step back for a second about why we started working on this initially. I mean, we knew when we designed the prize that this was an important area that we wanted to use the prize as a platform to help advance, you know, standards for this emerging industry. But we also were seeing early on that it was a very new topic for a lot of these companies. So we decided to approach it more as like an educational opportunity and help bring companies and innovators along the journey a little bit because many of them are scientists. They don't have, you know, this background working directly with communities. And so while they, you know, might really believe in all of these principles, they didn't know how to execute any of the ideas. And so when we proceeded with the first round of the competition, we started working initially with Carbon 180 and we developed an environmental justice questionnaire that was part of the milestone submission. And that was really intended to get everybody thinking about a lot of these topics and components. So it was more reflective and thinking about, okay, how might your project affect communities in different ways? Like, what are the different communities that populate the areas that you plan to work? You know, what are their past experiences and how do you start developing some programming and thoughts on this topic? And so from that questionnaire, we published an analysis of all the answers with Carbon 180. And that was something that we kind of put out into the space a year and a half or so ago. And that was like step one for us. For phase two of the prize, we really wanted to go deeper, provide more training and opportunities to learn and advance the thinking. So when kind of this idea came up with Ben, when we were really in the early brainstorming phases, we were really excited about the idea of a training existing because we knew that there was kind of an eagerness for more tools and resources for people to start using. And this is really intended to be that. So it was kind of a no-brainer that we would want to require it for everybody in the competition as a baseline to understand all of these different elements and different details. And, you know, it's a great primer, but it's also still fairly high level to the extent that we want people to continue learning and going deeper with all the background materials that are provided through the training. So we asked everybody in the prize to kind of go through this process, take the training, and then also start developing, you know, their community engagement plans. And we developed with Carbon Business Council and Institute for Responsible Carbon Removal what became the requirements for the finalist application, which was like a a series of questions that are like the start of building that plan. And so they were quite comprehensive. We asked teams to write a number of pages on all of these different topics that go into the process for teams and their submissions. And I think that, you know, what I've heard so far is that people have been really grateful to have resources and materials to help them get to that point. If we had just asked them to do that out of nowhere, I think a lot of people would have really struggled. So many people took the online training. They also participated in the in-person event that we did supported with Carbon Business Council in DC, the symposium, which was a little bit more like a in-person workshop style of some of the training materials. And so I think people have really started to have a more holistic perspective of how to approach some of this work. And we're, you know, grateful that this exists now out in the world, that people can use it whenever they're ready for it.
Yeah, I'm glad it's out in the world too. And I'm curious to know how approaches to environmental justice and community engagement are being embedded into kind of selecting winning teams throughout the competition as we get through the next round here.
Yeah, so the finalist submission is quite comprehensive. It really tries to look across a number of different areas of a team's carbon removal solution. So, you know, first and foremost, at this stage of the competition, there needs to be a working demonstration. We need to know that something actually exists that's removing carbon from the air and the ocean, and that needs to be showing strong performance. So kind of the existence of that and data proof points are really critical for our selection process right now. Then the next step is to really look at all the life cycle and emissions data and to start looking at cost projections. We look at costs actually at the megaton scale. So it's a bit out as they're getting into that next size plant versus the kiloton scale, which their demonstration is being built at. And so then the additional piece are all of the sustainability criteria and thinking about what does it look like as your solution scales up to gigaton? What are the environmental and social impacts associated with that? So the questions in this section are really looking at how have teams approached working with communities in their demonstration site to date, but also what are their plans moving forward? Because maybe they're demonstrating at 1,000 tons in one location, but that's not where a megaton or a gigaton scale plant might be in the future. So we tried to both look at work to date and work planned in the future around understanding, you know, how communities will be impacted, what kind of meaningful community engagement is being done, what are the potential risks of those projects, impacts on the communities. Are you exploring potential project benefits? It's not just about looking at the negative, but also what does your project bring to the place that you're going to be operating? And how do you make sure it's bringing things that the community actually wants? You know, you're not just pre-dictating those things. That's based on a consultative process. And then also, how do you ensure transparency on monitoring risks or, you know, project performance over time? If there's a problem, what is the accountability? So just asking people to think about all of those things, those answers are all part of the submission packets that the judges are reviewing. So it's like one of the many criteria that the judges will take into account in selecting the 20 finalists.
That's great to know. And I wonder if there's also an opportunity to create mechanisms for just ongoing monitoring of this, you know, that ongoing relationship with communities and engagement with communities as projects actually get off the ground. Are there plans for something like that? You know, this is obviously post-competition, so maybe we're not there yet, but I'm curious about just the opportunity to keep some of these projects accountable to some of these principles that we're talking about over the long-term cycle of their project.
Yeah, it's a great question and something we've thought a lot about kind of over the last few years. I mean, we've tried to put out different pieces of content that's summarizing and really trying to showcase what's going on with the projects as they advance. So I didn't mention before, but in addition to like the finalist application being built in a given way, we worked closely with Carbon Business Council and the Institute for Carbon Removal on developing some of those questions. We also issued a white paper in October that broke down like why we asked all the things that we asked and provided a series of materials that would be kind of useful resources for people on how to get into each of those topics. We've thought about different ideas around how to look at the next set of data that comes in from this. Should we maybe explore like deeper dives of case studies with the finalists? Would that be a way that would be an interesting example to the community of like how people are approaching this in practice? I think there's a lot of opportunities to explore that for the remaining year of the prize. I think that kind of beyond that, it probably won't be XPRIZE per se that's creating the accountability framework for monitoring those projects. But I think we'd be really interested to contribute to developing that with someone that another organization will kind of carry on after the prize is awarded in 2025.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. That's really exciting. And Ben, I want to build on this a little bit because I think this is such a great initiative to help project developers and technology developers and other stakeholders in the community really understand what responsible deployment means and how they can integrate it into how carbon removal projects are deployed. You know, when we have conversations at Carbon Removal Canada about what does inclusive community engagement practices look like, oftentimes we hear that it's not enough for the project developers to kind of understand what kind of key principles around responsible deployment should look like. But how do communities evaluate, ask questions, and engage in the process themselves? Are there efforts that are being kind of considered right now to maybe provide training or education or informing different communities around how do we make sense of these carbon removal projects? What sorts of questions should we be asking? What should we be interrogating? What should we be asking for? It just seems to me that there's an opportunity for education and informing communities as well as project developers. And I think that's probably, you know, a much more significant undertaking, but I'm really excited about the work you've done and think that there's an opportunity to build on it further. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's a great question and a really important approach. I think across the board, one thing that I'd highlight is both from the community side and from the project developer side, we're hearing folks why people are asking questions about this. People are curious to learn more about carbon removal on the community side. What are the benefits? Are the risks that I need to know about? On the project developer side, I just want to echo a point that Nikki was making that I think it's great that so many project developers are thinking about this. How do I approach community engagement? How can I really make this project a true win for a community? But with that, it does have to take this step deeper, which is how do we make sure that the tools and the resources are reaching folks? Yeah. So I think to answer that question, we cover some of this in the CDR RDT training, which is one big and important point is there's really not a one-size-fits-all approach when it comes to community engagement. Each community is going to vary, but there are certain commonalities and ways to think about approaching this that can start translating across community. So one important point in the training is really thinking about how to have a two-way dialogue with the community, and that's going to vary by community, but whatever community you're working in, what are those questions being asked? Are there knowledge gaps that can work to be filled in with not only a company, but academic local partners, local labor groups, really spanning the gamut. And so the CDR RDT covers some of that, the importance of a two-way dialogue. And also just recognizing that one community isn't all the same and communities might have different responses to projects. CDR RDT also talks a little bit about identifying multiple potential project locations, having conversations in communities that might be interested in a project and really identifying where there's going to be a mutual best fit. And I think some of that is ensuring that there's education on the community side, education on the project developer side, and just boosting knowledge and resources across the board.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And actually related to the latter point you made there, I'm curious to know, Ben, you know, community engagement, environmental justice, equity can have kind of different meanings to different groups depending on geography and a number of other factors. How can the key principles from the RDT be, you know, adapted in a way that is responding to a broader global context? Are there plans to do that?
Yes, I think part of the thought on putting out the introductory online training is that it's a beginning and not an end. And so we've been collecting great input and feedback from folks about what they want to see next and how to take this and adapt it. I think one example in terms of regional differentiation is Nikki mentioned a symposium that we co-convened with XPRIZE and other partners last year in Washington, D.C., and it was great. And we were talking about carbon removal deployment at a national level in the U.S. And some of the feedback coming out of that workshop is, this was great, these are helpful lessons, but what are the nuances of regional deployment and how is this going to vary from community to community? And so this spring, we're convening a symposium in Seattle to think about regional deployment in the Pacific Northwest, featuring local community members, tribal groups, corporate leaders who are based in the Pacific Northwest, and project developers who are based in the Pacific Northwest. And thinking through, the Pacific Northwest has a unique set of geologic conditions that make it receptive for certain forms of carbon removal that might vary than another geographic region. And so I think getting into the nuance of regional deployment and how this is going to vary by community is critically important, while at the same time trying to ensure that there's an overall architecture and framework that we've put forward in CDR-RDT to think about overall principles that can apply across the board as you start to segment between carbon removal pathway or geographic region.
Yeah, that's really great. I'm glad it's a beginning and not an end. That's exciting that this work is going to continue to evolve. You know, many of our listeners may not be deploying a carbon removal project themselves. I'm struck by the idea that this can have actually a pretty wide breadth of relevance to a number of different audience groups. Why should, you know, the listeners of this podcast, why should folks who are listening take this training, and what other groups are you hoping to kind of get involved in this effort going forward? And maybe I'll start with you, Ben, and then shift over to you, Nikki.
Sounds great and great question. So the training takes about 1 hour to complete. We're not asking folks to give us hundreds of hours of time out the gate. So I think for anyone who's interested in thinking more about these concepts, just start in the online training. It's free. It's a good way to just dive in and become familiar with the concepts. In addition to the training, like Nikki and I mentioned, CDR-RDT also includes a suite of resources. So we link on the website to more than 250 articles, academic publications. Anyone who wants to read up is great. There's templates for best practices for community benefit agreements on there that have been developed by the Sabin Center. So all kinds of resources for folks to sift through and dig through. And we want to hear feedback from folks. If community members are looking into this and have feedback, we want to hear from them. If there's ways that the resources can be tailored to be adjusted to make sure that it's maximally accessible for wider audiences, we want to hear that. But I think that there's knowledge contained within the website that's been developed by a lot of practitioners that folks can tap into today. I think beyond people operating in the carbon removal space, be they community members, national groups, project developers, investors, anyone that's working in carbon removal, there's really important lessons here as we zoom out and think about climate tech deployment across the board. Earlier in the podcast, I gave the example of the solar industry and what happens when local projects face opposition and the low rate of success when they do. So the frameworks that we're putting forward, the question we're asking, how can projects maximize benefits for local communities and minimize risks? I think there's something in there for everyone who's working in climate tech as we scale it up to be asking that question and to be thinking through how can this project that someone might be putting forward earn that social license to operate.
Yeah, I agree with everything Ben said. I mean, I'll just pick up on that last point there for a minute. I do think there is a lot of broad applicability and overlap between what we've written here for carbon removal as it relates to any energy and infrastructure project that's going into a community and building like a physical machine or a solution that's going to be present in people's lives, really thinking about the impact of that. It's important to have a holistic perspective. And we did come to the table writing the training and the submission questions and all the work we've done on the XPRIZE side to date with the perspective of innovators in mind, knowing that like that was the cohort we were trying to really educate and advance with the prize. But I do think when we started developing the questions, it became clear that like, okay, maybe this is an example and a resource for other stakeholders in the ecosystem across similarly related projects that people could pick up and use. Like maybe investors could apply the same kind of criteria and ask the same questions before they make big investments. You know, we already know DOE is doing so much great work in this space. They have a lot of resources out as well that we've cross-referenced in all of our trainings, but it's not just about the project developers, it's about the funders of those people and anyone who's really helping to scale these growing projects. They have a responsibility to also ensure that we're putting the right standards in place from the beginning.
Yeah, that all makes a lot of sense. And I'm really, really great to see the coalition that you've all kind of pulled together to start really tackling this problem. We'll be sure to take a look and link to not just the RDT, but make sure that folks see the resources so that they can go deeper and start applying some of this work more directly as part of their projects. But really, really excited about this initiative and glad that you're at the helm leading it alongside a number of important groups that have been involved in the co-development of these materials. So it sounds like you've approached this the right way. I'm curious to know, what's on the horizon for Carbon Business Council? and for XPRIZE, you know, what are some of the announcements that we can expect over the next few months? And how can folks learn more about some of the key things that you're working on? Nikki, I'll start with you and XPRIZE.
Sure. So we mentioned at the beginning, you know, that we're working on picking our finalists. So that's kind of the big announcement we're all working towards on the XPRIZE side in the spring. And then, you know, in addition to that, also publishing more data from the cohort of submissions that came in. So stay tuned for a new report on all of that from us. The other thing that we are actually just getting ready to publish is our Circular Carbon Network annual market report. So this is another initiative that we spend a lot of time on the side, developing a lot of primary market data on the growth of investment in the space, both for carbon removal and for carbon utilization and point source capture, since we kind of got our start in that space from XPRIZE's side on our last prize. So that'll be coming out, and it's really a great overview of like where all the companies are at in terms of capital raise. And, you know, just a quick teaser, the numbers are really exciting. I mean, in 2023, $8 billion were raised by circular carbon companies, and we've reached a max of $25 billion cumulatively raised. So we'll dig into all of that. So if you're interested in the investment side at all, you can check out that report as well.
So much good stuff coming out. That's so great. Ben.
Yeah, definitely. I'm excited for that report to come out. I think some really encouraging numbers there about the growth of the sector. And yeah, on the CDR-RDT front, I would say stay tuned for additional tools and resources. And like I said, CDR-RDT itself links out to more than 250 that have been compiled. I think that it can be a great conduit to just start reading up on what some of the community responses to carbon removal have been, where there's case studies of what's working. So the training, like we said, is meant to be introductory, a beginning and not an end. So to the extent that that can be the beginning of a journey or the continuation of a journey into thinking about responsible deployment, hope that folks will take a deeper dive into that. Other things coming down the pike at the Carbon Business Council overall, I mentioned the symposium coming up in Seattle. We have info on that. I can drop a link in for the show notes. It's a great opportunity to take a deeper dive and actually have a roll up the sleeves workshop for panels and breakout sessions about what regional deployment of carbon removal looks like in the Pacific Northwest. So hoping listeners interested in participating in an all-day workshop can join us for that symposium. We put out a newsletter, The Carbon Fix, that's free and folks can sign up for on our website, which is just a great way to stay up to date with everything coming down the pike, startups that have raised new rounds, policy developments, what we have coming up at the Carbon Business Council, other things coming down the pike for us. Like I said, we'll be putting out a new issue brief soon on enhanced weathering, and that issue brief on marine carbon removal is hot off the press, and that's on our website if folks want to take a look. And we will also be putting out job posting shortly. So if anyone is wanting to dig in and work in carbon removal full time and support these ecosystem building efforts, then they should stay tuned for those job descriptions when those post.
All right, that's great. And glad to hear there are more carbon removal jobs on the horizon. That's awesome. Thank you both so much for your time, and thank you so much for what you're doing. I really appreciated our conversation today.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.